This episode is powered by denmeditation.com. Though meditation is the primary focus, the bigger goal is for people to understand and love themselves, thus creating more harmony in the community at large. To find out more about Den Meditation's teacher training programs, retreats, and all things Den Meditation, go to denmeditation.com.
Hey, I'm glad we're doing this, and congratulations on your book.
I'm so honored and grateful to be doing this with you. Thank you for having me on your show.
No, of course, and congrats. This is exciting.
It is exciting. I've never been more excited about anything in my life.
Is that true? Because, I mean, you've accomplished many, many things.
Yeah, girl. I mean, selling my business almost killed me.
In what way?
I just was so out of alignment towards the end. Like for 2 years, you know, I was, if you would have told me that I would have scaled that business when I first started it, I would never have believed you. And I don't know if I would have actually signed up for it. I am really proud of it. It's one of the greatest things I've ever done, but, I'm too much of an empath to have a team of 30 people.
I know that.
And, you know, and so, and also, I've just been on such a deep spiritual journey, and while I can work and fit in the squeaky, clean corporate narrative and help people with their brands, I'm way more here for the new earth and the return of the goddess and the Palladian messages of light than I am anything. So the book that's coming out just feels like my true work in this planet. And so that's why I say, you know, it's more important than anything I've ever done. I'm really excited about it.
It's so nice though, because I mean, you've had an evolution. I mean, like anyone, if you look, hindsight's 2020, right? So we see how all the pieces connect. But it is fascinating because even though you talk about like, I was just not in alignment with that anymore, when you connect all your pieces, like you started that business, right? To help people find a more authentic version of themselves, right? To sell themselves through authenticity versus just bullshit.
Correct. Yes. And I still very much am about that. And I'm so proud of what Simply Be is and what Simply Be stood for. And when I look back at that avatar, you know, the woman who started that business 7 years ago, I'm in awe of her. I'm so proud of her. And she was so on purpose and so deeply aligned. I think if I'm going to be really honest, I mean, that business, it extended beyond anything I ever thought it would. And it broke my heart like over and over again. You know, being an entrepreneur is,
you're not easy. Like,
no. And the intensity of the hustle, which I've, you know, talked, I named my new podcast The Spiritual Hustler because I want to reclaim that word. I really do love to work and to, you know, be in abundance, but I just really didn't see how out of my body I was. And I don't know if you know this about my story, but I went broke at 33 years old and had to like ask my parents to bail me out. Like it was really a trauma response that lived in my body that I didn't really realized was still living in my body when I started Simply Be. So I started making all this money and I was like, I'm in abundance, but I was really just running away from being broke again. And that just powered this hustle that came from what became like a toxic place.
That's when you talk a little bit about it in the book, and you do say that, which I found really interesting too, this idea of, yes, you created abundance. So it was easy for you to convince yourself of like, oh, I'm out of that world. I'm now in abundance. Yeah. But then you said like when you dove deeper into it, like you just said, that the vibration was more still of running and scarcity. It's just like solving the scarcity problem versus actually living in abundance.
Yes. One of the biggest, so did you read it?
Yeah, I did.
I did?
I mean, that wasn't in the beginning of the book. So, you know, I read it.
Thank you. You know, you're on so many podcasts and you don't expect people, you want people to read it. That's why I'm here to talk about it, but not everybody.
Because you also talk about on that, how when you dove deeper and you went to the work, you found out about the woman, your kind of past
literally,
life.
Literally, I was just going to bring that up. That's why I was like,
yeah, please. So talk about it. I did. Go talk about it.
Well, first of all, thank you, Tom. Like, thank you for being such a supporter by simply reading it. It's thank you.
Of course. So
a few years ago, you know, I've done plant medicines and I've worked in that world, you know, with Integris healers and not so Integris healers. I've learned some lessons. Every time I bring up plant medicine in the book, I'm like, asterisk, footnote, I'm not here to glorify this or make this cool. Like, this is serious stuff, and be very, very sovereign when you're doing this work. But I'm very blessed to have a very incredible healer. I still work with her, who introduced me to MDMA in a ceremonial capacity. And in my first session with her, I've now done multiple journeys with her, but this was the very first one. The medicine started to hit, and she's, you know, it's basically like a 7-hour therapy session. You know, she's there holding space, asking you questions, guiding you. I'm like, Lauren, there's something in my womb. There's something stuck in my womb. She's like, can you go into it? Like, what is, does it have a name? What does it look like? What does it feel like? And I could clearly feel like it was a person. It was a woman. And as soon as I said that, and she kept asking me to dig deeper to identify her, she was in her 20s. She was based in Eastern Europe. She was from like the 15, 1600s. I could place her timeline and her identity. And as soon as she asked me, does she have a name? And I said, yeah, her name is Marguerite. I still talk Marguerite. She changed my world. She's an ancestor. And I downloaded her entire story, and she was abused and abandoned. She was living on the streets. She had no shelter. She had no food. She had no money. She was wet and freezing from freezing cold rain. I could feel, I started shaking in the ceremony. Like, I was feeling her shivering cold. And she had these long hands that were like, you know, emaciated. Like, she had, you could see her knobby knuckles, and she was gripping with them, like, please help me, please feed me, please save me. And this whole visceral feeling of like survival, you know, just came online. And she was like in my womb. She was living in me. Like, her just DNA had been like carbon copying, printing in my lineage of this sense of survival. And as soon as I was able to name her and identify her and like acknowledge her, I was able to release her. I mean, Lauren, my guide, really helped me do that. And my womb sort of cut open, and she fell away, and my womb became a star. And I feel like I released lifetimes of this survival vibration of survival. And I talk about this in that chapter, which is a chapter about money, and how there's all of these conversations today around manifestation. And I'm here for that conversation. Like, let's make money. But I think that a lot of people are talking about manifesting abundance from the cognitive, the content, not the context. And that if we're really going to be in an abundant business or abundant life, like, we have to feel safety in our bodies and trust that we are safe and to taken care of in the first place to even hold money.
It's heavy.
It's super heavy.
Cause that's, I mean, we all, whether we want to admit it or not, have a lot of trauma. And I think if we all were willing to dig deep, we'd realize so many places we don't feel safe.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, is really a core through line of, you know, the book in many ways, just how we've been programmed by the trauma. And it's not because the world is evil or our parents were evil. It's just, there's been a lot of pain on this planet and a lot of unconsciousness around that pain and a lack of integration around that pain. And so we're here in 2024 as, you know, sovereign, responsible adults living with that, literally inside of our bodies. And it all comes back to the body. And that was really the biggest unlock to really my healing and selling my business and shedding an identity and changing my entire life so that I could operate from a place of more safety. Like, at the end of the day, it's about safety.
And when you released her, clearly energetically things shifted, you know, frequentially, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. You felt, you were in a different realm. Did anything physical, like did anything evolve with your body physically? Because I always wonder sometimes, not wonder, we know that things have a physical effect on us, but I do feel like you see some people like lose weight super quickly after they've like released some traumas and you realize how much is actually blocking you in more ways than you realize.
Oh, I definitely lost some weight. I feel like I shape-shifted. Huh. I feel like my face changed. I feel like my eyes changed. I think more physically, it's a really great question. I went on this deep healing journey, cleared Marguerite, got into my body, like started to really heal my nervous system.
Cleared Marguerite sounds like a good album name, by the way.
Yeah. maybe I'll do something with that. And what really changed, if I'm going to be really honest, is I unhooked from the matrix, right? Like I unhooked from this deep, constant hunger and desire to hustle. My body knew I was safe. And I remember this was about 6 months before I sold my business. And I had slowed down so much. And we started losing a little bit of money because I was the rainmaker as the CEO of that company. And we were in a little bit of a freak out at the executive level. And everyone's looking at me like, well, why aren't you running as fast as you always have? And I called Lauren, my healer, and I was like, What did you do to me? Like I have this, not at her, but like what is happening to me? Because I physically can't operate the way I once did. And it's not conducive to this identity and lifestyle that I've signed up for. And she has taught me so much. And, you know, really it's like, this is what happens when you surrender to Gaia and you make new contracts that are more in right relationship and aligned to, you know, the nature of how you're supposed to be on this planet. And I've made it obviously through the other side of that, but there was a big reckoning of holy shit, there's something this requires a bit of sacrifice to truly face, you know, and transmute what was living inside of you and running your life.
Remind me timeline of when Marguerite happened and Egypt.
Marguerite happened right before Egypt.
Right before.
Yeah, right before.
Wow.
Yeah, right before Egypt. That was at the end of 22. And I was, that was the year that I was diagnosed with depression and hit burnout, went through what I would call like the rage against the machine called my life. You know, I really want to be super honest about the unsexy side of entrepreneurship. Like,
oh, it's exhausting.
It's brutally exhausting. And I had planned that trip to Egypt, not really knowing at all where I would be, because I planned that trip a year before. And I met this healer, and I remember going out to lunch with her, and I was just a wreck. And, you know, she doesn't just work with medicine. She's a coach, and she helps lots of people in lots of different ways. But she suggested that I try this medicine in a ceremonial sense. So I went into that ceremony burnt out, really burnt out. And, you know, someone once said to me, and I really love this about, you know, the world of medicine, that the ceremony isn't the ceremony. It's the doorway to the ceremony. The ceremony is your life. The ceremony is you integrating those experiences into your everyday. And so, yeah, about a month later, I went to Egypt, and that's when everything really shifted.
I mean, to the ceremony point, and then we'll talk about Egypt, obviously. I love that because it is, well, it's also this reminder that there's no magic fixes. It's not this like, you go, you do something once and you, it's done. Or, you know, we used to have that all the time at the Den. People would come in and be like, I'm going through this, and I take a meditation class, like, why aren't I fixed? Like, why isn't it all better? You know, it's like you said, it's the portal to then how it integrates into your life. And there's still this integration. And I'm sure, and I would love to talk about it, you're still probably going through it. Like you're launching a book. When it's in you and you know how to, because I remember I felt the same way where I was getting really burnt out and I was teaching more and I was trying to pull away more from like the CEO aspect and like running the entire business of like the Den. And I remember even saying like, oh, I think maybe I need to sell or pass it on. Like, this is just not in my body anymore. I'd rather be doing this stuff. And then COVID happened. Mm. And it's like, we had to reinvent. And so I was like, oh my God, I'm being called to go right back into that insane energy. Cause it was back to being like startup energy. Cause you had to reinvent like in a week.
Yeah.
And I was a shell of myself. It was one of the most miserable I've ever felt. I remember it was my birthday. I was like yelling at everybody. It was like horrible.
Yeah.
Because I remember saying like, and it was hard because I'm like, God, I'm so aware now of this energy. I'm aware of this like really masculine energy that I wear very easily.
Me too.
And I succeed in very easily, but I know that it's not always the healthiest for me. And now I'm aware mm-hmm. of it versus before I kind of blindly just allowed it to be, you know, the drug that I loved. And once I became aware that I didn't love it, then it hit harder. It was like harder. And then it was like severe burnout, like you were talking about, like severe.
Yes.
Because you just get so exhausted. But it is, you know, go ahead.
No, there's so many layers to burnout. Like you, like I, that's at least what I learned. You know, in January of 2022 was when I was diagnosed with situational depression. I couldn't leave the house, cried every day, couldn't shower, like went through a ketamine protocol to heal my depression. And my therapist recommended medication. I was like, I'm going to go the holistic route. I worked with a revolutionary medicine called ketamine that helped really truly heal my physical brain. But then it was 7, 8, 9 months later, because I had gone right back into the hamster wheel of my freaking business, that I really reached burnout. And burnout was not necessarily depression at that point. It was rage. It was just misery.
Yes, I was angry.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I kind of look at like a cigarette tray and like you see butts and ashes. Like that's what I felt like.
I was butts and ashes.
I'm not kidding. I was cashed. I was cashed. Yeah.
And it's so hard in businesses. Like when you said like when you're an entrepreneur, there's nowhere to hide. So it's like you either keep going to a well that's empty and just keep, you know, borrowing from it. Or you go to Egypt.
Or go to Egypt. Exactly. Yeah. Like I said, I did not, my higher self, the universe, something much bigger, maybe Egypt itself had plotted that trip when it happened. Not me, like something much higher guided me there at that exact point in my life. And it was, can I swear on your show?
I'm from New Jersey. I swear all the time. My daughter learns.
I have a potty mouth.
Potty mouth. I have the dirtiest mouth there is. So go for it.
Well, I just was going to say that Egypt fucks up your life. Like if you go there and you tap in and you're guided by the right people, which I was guided, fortunate enough to be taken through that country, you walk out of there not the same person. You know, I believe that it is, I don't believe, I know to be true. It's a direct portal and cosmic doorway, right? To the galactic cosmos. It's not just like a historical site and learn about the Egyptian pharaohs who built these pyramids. Like, no, like the dawn of civilization from other parts of the universe came down and co-created humanity there. And you are walking through these temples that are still alive with those frequencies, and you have wild experiences, completely sober, coherent, that sound crazy when you tell the stories when you come back. Like that, there's no way that happened in real life. That sounds like a movie. And you know, I had one experience like that after the next, with the biggest experience kind of coming towards the end of that trip, which was at the temple of Dendera, who's the temple of Hathor, the goddess of Hathor. And I did a lot of research post-Egypt to kind of, you know, as I was writing the book. And I learned that the location of Hathor specifically has a direct line to the Pleiadian constellation. And the Pleiadians, you know, have the Pleiadian constellation has 7 suns. So we have 1 star sun in our solar system. The Pleiadians have 7, and they're called the 7 sisters. They all have names. I don't know them all by heart. Alcyone and many others. And the Hathor goddess is actually represented as the Hathors in not only Egyptian mythology, but in many, many cultures. And there's 7 of them. There's 7 Hathors, and they have a lore that they're connected to the seven sisters of the Pleiadians. And when I was in that temple, I was by myself in one of these little alcoves, and I was just drawn to close my eyes and press my body up against this wall. And the second I closed my eyes, I got struck by white lightning, literally. No other explanation than that's what it was. And the second I was struck by white lightning, I felt my whole body kind of dissolve and expand at the same time. Like, I felt my whole body just reach far past the planet Earth, and all of this white light was all I could see. And I started hearing voices, like specific voices speaking really fast, sometimes in unison, sometimes not. Like, they were talking over each other as almost if they were like
good
fighting.
Thing you're Jewish.
Exactly.
You're like, and this is every Friday night.
Thanks for saying that. Shalom. And I mean, you can go read my book, but it's what they told me was basically like, girl, you've missed the plot. You've missed the plot of the human experience, and you have forgotten that your whole point of your human experience is to actually enjoy it, and not just to enjoy it, but to relish in the pleasure and the bliss and the gift that it is to be in a human body, and not just a human body, but a woman's body. And that you chose to be a woman in this lifetime because you are a piece of us. You are one with the goddess, but not just you. You're not so special, Jessica. All women are. And you've got to take this message to as many women as you can so that everyone fucking remembers that. And we create a new earth, and we return the feminine into the frequency of this planet. And in so many words, that's the Cliff's Notes. But yeah, that changed my life.
I mean, I would hope so. I love how at one point, weren't they like, you think you're strong now, like you yeah. have no clue.
That was Sekhmet. So there's three goddesses. There's many goddesses in Egyptian mythology, but the ones that I connected to the most, like, and that Hathor story is one of a few wild, wild stories. Sekhmet, the goddess of war and healing, the lioness goddess, and Isis, who's represents the divine mother. And we got to see Sekhmet's chamber. So this is another thing about Egypt. You kind of got to go. It's a really weird country in the sense that people who live there, and the guards, if you will, that work these temples, it's almost like they don't want you to commune. They're just like, no, just come and look, take pictures and leave. Like, there's nothing here for you to see. It's a very weird energy, actually. And the people that we went with on our pilgrimage are like mystics, right? They were Egyptian. They had what I'd call like the codes, and they kind of knew where to go, when, what time. We had all of this access to these temples privately, but you pay for it. It's a business. So we had to tip off a guard $4,000. Like, we all, there was like 17 of us. We all pitched in, but we paid this guard $4,000 so that we could go inside of Sekhmet's chamber in the temple of Ptah, which is at Karnak's temple, which no one gets to go and see. And I walked into her chamber, not to be too detailed, but I had a dream about Sekhmet a week before, the first night I got to Egypt, where she came in and she ripped me up with her lioness sort of power. And it was crazy. So I woke up and I was like, I love her. That was kind of my
right.
Response.
You were super sick, right? And then you were sick, and yeah, then you got better.
Yeah, I got to Egypt, burnt out, super run down, could feel myself on the verge of like literally getting maybe the flu or something crazy. And it was like day one of this trip. I was like, fuck. So I tapped out of the first day activity so that I could sleep. I was jet lagged, and I went to bed for 14, 15 hours. And I've never had a visitation in my dream like this from a goddess or any sort of higher being, like not ever like this. She came into my dream, and she's the goddess of war and healing. And
did she tell you who she was, or how did you know?
I just knew.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. I'd heard about her peripherally, but I had never known anything else about her. And in that 15-hour night's sleep, I got the flu, but I didn't just get the flu. I got like the extreme flu. Like, I was choking, burning up, sweating my sheets, like snot. Like, I couldn't breathe. I was tossing, turning. And then eventually the sickness subsided and I fell asleep and I woke up however many hours later, totally fine. It was, and she pushed the sickness through. She's like, we're going to accelerate this so that you can heal. I'm going to let your body war with itself and I'll fight with you, or I'll fight you. I don't even know what the fuck she was doing. But then I woke up the next morning and I felt like she'd come in to bless me, to like help me do these next 15 days. So when I got to her temple, when we tipped off that guard and got to see her, I was so excited because I was like, she's my girl now. And I walked into her little tiny chamber, and the second I stepped in, I felt my clitoris start to like tingle and my womb start to tingle. Like literally my vagina and my womb were like the second I walked in, and I heard her. I'm very clairaudient to begin with, but being in Egypt, it came online like crazy. And she said to me, that's your point. Thank you for reading my book. She was like, you think you're powerful now, Jessica, like turn these centers on inside of your body, these sacred technology of the female body, and you will be more powerful than you will ever know. That's what she told me.
Did she tell you how?
I mean, I've definitely incorporated more self-pleasure practices. I yoni theme. I got into primal growling. I've tried to commit to have more sex with my husband, you know, but we've been married for 12 years. So that's a touch and go all the time. But, you know, I feel like it was a permission slip to just own my feminine power in general. Like that being a woman is my superpower. And I've kind of always known that, but like now I'm like stepping through that invitation with so much more radical, unapologetic, you know, truth.
How do you feel like you do that in like an everyday way?
Well, some people would maybe call me like, I don't really think people would call me this, but I'm all about the feminine. I am radically dedicating my work, my mission, my message, my content, my client coaching, all of the programs that I've been building out for my new business is all dedicated to the rise and the return of the and the reclamation of the feminine. So you might call me a feminist. I never really considered myself to, I'm here for the return of the goddess. I only listen to Audible books, read books. I'm so deeply fascinated with the matriarchy that we were before the patriarchy came along. Mm. It's woven into like my psyche and my passion in every day of my life. And I just got crystal clear that that's really what I'm here to do, not run a branding agency, as beautiful as my business was. It's really to awaken what's been awakened in me is not just so much like the teacher, but the sister, you know, like let's link arms and like remember who we once were, and that this game was written by not for us, not by us and not for us. And we're suffering as women, especially in business, trying to play a masculine, patriarchal, toxic construct. And I really want to wake us all up to do it differently. And it's scary and it feels radical, I think, to a lot of women. But I don't think that we can survive unless we return to that. And I'm very, very committed to that. So my narrative has changed. My beliefs have changed. My priorities have changed. And my lifestyle has changed.
I was going to say, talk about when you got home. Mm. Like, what viscerally looked and felt different to you?
Well, I almost got a divorce.
That was one of the things I was going to ask is, was your husband like, what the fuck and who are you? Because that's hard.
It was the hardest part. We fought pretty much every day for like 2 months and almost called it. Because he was just like, who are you? And I was like, I can't meet me. Yeah, I don't know who I am, but I know that I wasn't who you married. So that was tough. That was really tough. And thank God we have a very, very talented relationship coach who is, you know, been a part of our marriage for a few years. So she did navigate that with us, and shout out to Annie. And, what really happened aside from, you know, going through that with Brian was I really got back into my body and I started to truly heal my nervous system. I left Chicago. I went to Nashville that winter. I spent most of my time out.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Side, I started being way more intentional with the moon cycles. I synced my period to the moon, which kind of just happened naturally. Like it was really my whole body reoriented to Gaia. I got the book deal for the light work about 2 months later. And transparently, I said to my publisher, who's wonderful, he's like, I was like, when's my pub date going to be? He's like, your pub date can be whenever you want it to be. I said, okay, I'd like it to come out in the summer of 2024. He goes, okay, it's February. That's no problem. You just have to turn it in by June 1st, which was like 3.5 months. And so I channeled this book. I didn't use AI. I didn't hire a fucking ghostwriter. I wrote every word of this book myself. And the fact that I was able to do it in 3.5 months was a pure channeling. And that came from what had opened up in me, I believe, I know to be true from Egypt. A lot changed. I hosted my first retreat. It was the most beautiful, my first retreat in a while. It was the most beautiful thing. I have to own that I had hired an amazing sort of integrator in my business who took over the reins of the day-to-day of the agency. So she really allowed me to step back. And in that stepping back, my word for the year was joy. And I just practiced joy almost every day in the smallest to biggest ways for an entire year. And
where practicing joy like that, we're really committing. So yeah. That's my word. And that's what I'm going to live by, where that's difficult.
Mm. The 3D, I still had responsibilities. I still had to be on Zoom calls and client pitches and profit and loss meetings and stressful day-to-day life. When we are entrepreneurs and we still need to keep the money coming in and holding up the sky, you can't often say no. You have to be opportunistic and not, draw all the boundaries to protect your time and therefore your joy as much as you should or want to. And so there was a lot of moments where I could feel that side of me getting sucked back in, and I had to really create accountability and structure around my joy. I looked at joy less as like an external expression and more of like an internal devotion to how I would end my days, how I would start my days, what I would do with my free time. I just felt like if I wasn't going to actually build structure into my day-to-day schedule, that's why I say like the 3D, because it'll get you. And you have to make sure that you hold integrity. Like that's something I really, looking back on my former self, I always wanted joy. I always wanted space and balance. I didn't want my schedule to be back to back, but then I would sacrifice my own self-integrity. Like I would have an assistant. I had assistants who, God bless them, they were the ones that like would tell me, you shouldn't take all of these calls. And I would say, I want to take Fridays off. Fridays are for me, for example. And then my Fridays would be booked with calls because I didn't want to miss the opportunity, or someone else needed me. And I surrendered that to their agenda. And so I abandoned myself a lot for many years when it came to how I was building my business. And that definitely crept up in 23.
Did you do that in your relationship too? Like with a personality like that, where you also, was it more than just business? Business is always such an easy place to look because it's so obvious. Yeah. Yeah. But were you doing that in other places too? Like if your husband needed something or stuff you need to do for you guys as a partner or your household, or do you know what I mean?
Totally. I mean, I'm very blessed. I have an amazing husband who's very supportive and accepting of who his wife is. But for example, we had, because our marriage had gotten so rocky at the end of the year when I came back from Egypt, we set some new agreements and new values. And one of those agreements was that we would take like a long weekend, just him and I, once a quarter, just to celebrate the quarter, just be with each other, like no work. We did that one out of four quarters.
Right. Like, see, that's what, you know,
like, yeah, we didn't hold that commitment because life got in the way, you know? So that's definitely an example, but on a day-to-day basis, I feel like my husband has been very, supportive of just my processing and my growth. I'm very lucky.
Like, do you feel like getting, cause I'm trying to get to also like the crux of the emotionality behind that idea of, yes, it's opportunistic as you use, but it feels like it's more than that, that it's not just, it's like, if you did at one point set a boundary or in the beginning, like when you first started setting the boundaries, how did it feel?
Scary. You know, it goes back to Marguerite,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the being opportunistic is not necessarily a bad thing. I think in many ways we need to be to grow and can be beautiful. But if I were to really hone in on why I was saying yes to so many things, it was out of survival, you know, like thinking about Marguerite's grippy, knobby hands, like someone hands her a little tiny piece of bread, she's going to just grab it. She's like, this might be the last piece of bread I'll eat in 2 weeks. You know, it was like, it came from this sense of lack of safety. And I was so unconscious of that for most of my life. And, you know, it's funny that you bring up that I'm in a book launch, right? Because I was literally, I've been stressed.
How are you not?
It's like so fucking intense. And
of course.
I woke up the other day, the Tuesday after Memorial Day, and I like blinked open my eyes and I was like, book launch is in 2 months and that's basically tomorrow. And all of this anxiety came up in my body and my team has felt it and I've just not really been grounded and just anxious. And so this morning I was at my altar and I was meditating and it was like I heard my higher self or spirit or something say, you know, are you really going to walk your walk, Jessica? Like, are you going to hold the commitment you've made to yourself and out loud? You know, it's hard.
That's where I think it's so hard because I can feel it in me talking to you about it. It's like all like bleh, where yeah. it is, especially I really love when you put it like it's integrity to yourself.
Yeah.
But there is so much like trauma around that idea sometimes of prioritizing.
Yeah.
You know, there just is of like prioritizing yourself versus, and for me, I feel like guilt too. It's like, well, no, but this is now the priority. Like what I do a lot, which serves zero purpose. So I need to figure out a way to get out of it. But it's always like, well, when this is done, then I have all the space or the time or the freedom, right? It's just, I just have to get through this project. Or if it were you, but me, I'd be like, once the book launch is done, then, you know, and what happens with me is it's just a million more things. Like when the business went away, when I cleared that, it's just a million more projects come up in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm literally in that right. I had this conversation with my assistant this morning, who's just an angel. And I was like, these next 2 months are a sprint, but then we're going to be on the other side of book launch and like, it's going to come. And I'm working this hard to get us to that point where we don't have to do this anymore. But you're so right. It's like, we live in such a state of constant stimulation. And like I heard on a podcast recently, this kind of freaks me out. Maybe it's not going to sound as profound coming out of my mouth, but this someone said, the pace of the planet right now is the slowest it will ever be. Like,
oh, interesting. Right?
I'm like, what do you talk? Like 8 billion people, half of them are on the internet, AI, like virtual reality. We can just do 3D printing. Like, you can nanosecond information across the globe. Like, what do you mean this is the slowest it's ever going to be? This feels like the fever pitch. And that really stayed with me, you know? And I don't have all the answers. I feel like what has really been a practice, what has been an intention, has been to move away literally from a big city and spend as much time as I can in nature. I feel like I've cultivated a deep relationship, and I know I have deeper to go with Gaia. You know, she doesn't move. She moves as slow as the seasons. You know, she is in right relationship with the universe. And if we can do our best, and whatever that looks like, and for me, it's simply just getting in it as much as possible to attune our frequencies back to that pace, even just for a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. at a time. I feel like that's an antidote, but life persists, you know, it just does.
And it's hard. It does persist. And yet it's like so we'll talk about you are switching or have switched or in the process of switching or always, we're always switching, I guess, frequencies of like how you're walking it. So yeah. It's such like, it's so interesting to think of like that middle ground of when you're in evolution of the back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you listen to my podcast, and it's okay. I had a podcast recently come out called Why You Should Throw Your Former Self a Funeral. Because I say I go into Egypt, I died when that lightning bolt struck me. I literally, a version of Jessica died. Like, she shed, a lot of crazy things happened to me in the following days after that, which again is in the book. And I really feel like my DNA upgraded and like things alchemized in my system. It was pretty incredible. And I was like, wow, that girl, that bright yellow pineapple, fake eyelashes, super blonde hair, fake tan, like that girl died. She's done. And I came back and my face shape shifted. I healed my nervous system. I sold my business. Like, that girl is gone. And earlier this year in February, I went up to Chicago for a work trip because I'm living here in Nashville. And within like the second I get to Chicago, I start feeling all of this scarcity, all of this anxiety, all of this overwhelm. My heart is racing. I can't sleep. I'm like kind of a bitch. And I'm like, I thought that girl died. Like, she came back like, whew, like a ghost. And it really tripped me out. I was like, I thought that girl died. Why is she back? And I talked to some healers and guides, and they were like, you just because you said you honored her and loved her and blessed her and released her doesn't mean you actually did. You need to ceremonialize that. You actually need to honor her for real. And so a month or two later on the full moon, I had a bonfire, a fire pit on my land, and I lit it. And I put on a dress that I used to wear all the time as that girl, like literally a dress I'd worn probably a dozen times, and journaled and channeled her confidentially, transparently on your, I took a microdose mushroom, and I just like allowed her to speak through me on the page.
What did she have to say?
She had a lot to say. She said, the headline of what she had to say was, don't remember me or talk about me and refer to all of the pain and the darkness. Please remember me for the beauty.
Oh my God, it makes me sad actually.
Yeah. Oh girl, I cried so hard as I channeled all of that. She was like,
she was like angry at you a little bit.
She kind of was.
Yeah.
She really was. She was like, I got you here. Like, don't fucking forget that. Don't dismiss me. So I took off the dress, ripped up the paper. I burned it. And the next morning I took the ashes and I laid them in a bed of flowers and returned her to the earth. And now I call her my angel, not my ghost. Yeah.
It's a different vibration entirely.
Correct. And it helps.
I mean, that's huge because I know you talk about it in the book a lot too, about And like people who listen to this podcast, you know, we've all discussed this about honoring and working with your shadows, that it's not, it's not this like push them aside, they're not worth it. It's the same idea. It's how do you integrate and let them become part of you.
Part of you. They're such holy parts of you. They are the beautiful mosaic of you. Like, you can't take any credit for you without that, without them. The light and the dark. So all of those identities possess both.
Talk a little bit more. And one of the things in the book you also say, which I love, is I won't be able to quote it, but that your emotions are actually your gateway to your higher consciousness or deeper consciousness.
Yeah. That's a Palladian perspective that I think a lot of people would say that, but I read all of the Palladian books over the years and I learned a lot from reading about them. And, one of the biggest things that I took away was that our emotional feeling ability as human beings is our biggest superpower. Like, and I say this in the book, I'm like, with all due respect to dogs and crows and elephants and ants, like they feel things, but they do not have the full spectrum of the emotionality of the human experience. And we limit and block and suppress and shame or label or value others over other feelings like all the time, when really the full spectrum of our emotional feeling centers is what makes us quantum, what makes us the ability to reach higher states of consciousness when we really lean into the breadth of the human experience. And that the more willing we are to face the grief and the rage, and also embody the juicy, delicious, unabashed joy, like to lean into it all, so that we literally expand our capacity for the light and the dark, which makes us pretty, in my view, unstoppable and authentic and powerful. And so I have a whole chapter about, you know, the power of emotions, and that this is also very Palladian, but that we're living sort of in a living library, right? Like everything has a cosmic intelligence, from stones on the ground to trees, as we know. I mean, and this includes, and humans are the library card is what they say. We have stored information in our cells, literally living inside of our DNA. We're made of electricity that has been dormant and suppressed, whether that's by trauma, whether that's by toxic processed food, the media, the government, like I can go off, but that humanity is being kept in a state of slumber and disempowerment. And the way that we break through that is by activating our DNA and activating our human physical bodies. And that includes our emotions and our thoughts and having it all come back online. And we can truly like ascend from this very muted, dense reality, I think, that is designed currently on this planet to keep humanity in those lower states so we can be controlled, and to feel it all, to feel the full breath, to not be numb is how we break through and really become light workers on the planet.
Do you feel like that's an element of what was happening to you in Egypt after you got kind of the lightning strike? And I know you were saying you were like super sick and your body hurt, and then you got hypersensitive to everything. Do you feel like that was a little bit in like your, I don't know if you use the word upgrading, but in your evolution or your changes, were you just feeling it more? Was your polarity increasing?
I love this question. You really did read my book.
I did read your book.
I'm so obsessed with you. I think it's really good.
Thank you.
I'm grateful people are reading it. It hasn't come out yet. I'm like really nervous/excited.
That's great.
I would say, yes, I know that's exactly what happened to me. I feel like there was a DNA upgrade. I actually had a reading with a psychic medium a year later, and she didn't know anything about, she knew I'd gone to Egypt, but she didn't know any details, not a single one. And she said, something happened to you there. She said, you spoke light language, quantum healing, you healed generations of trauma.
Wow.
And that was sort of this breakthrough, this shedding of, and I've always sort of been awake. I'm like, what's happening here is not real. It's a movie. Like, there's some really dark forces at the top of like big pharma and big government. I mean, we could talk about that, but for me personally, I had never felt more in my heart than I'd ever felt after those few days. Once I had alchemized all of that light, so many memories came up from childhood. I was basically sick. I couldn't move, eat. I was raw. I cried at everything. I was just hypersensitive, literally to everything, to light, to sound, to technology, to food, to people, to energy, to dogs on the street. I just was like sad, heartbroken to see, you know, stray dogs. And I came through on the other side of that, like so blissfully awake. And, you know, I'm not saying I feel that way every day, but I've reached it and it changed me. And I just think that that's available to all of us in our own unique way. And when I read the Pleiadians like years before, I was like, what are the Pleiadians? You know, they're extraterrestrials. Like, I'm from there. What does that even mean? And then I started reading these books that are very dense and hard to understand. And I understood them in my body. I was like, this is right. This is true. Humanity is designed to be quantum, to be limitless, to have it be easy. and for all of us to be empowered. You know, I hope that my book and my message and my story, I'm just like everyone else, but I hope that it unlocks a little bit more truth and possibility, you know?
I think it does. I think it's an absolute reminder. I mean, just even in this conversation, I think whether people are to the extreme, like you were, or someone who's an entrepreneur or just living their day to day, I think most people on this planet are just in rote, you know, it's just, and so I felt like it was just such a beautiful awakening of, I mean, look, you just said it now, it was generations of trauma that you cleared. Yeah. I mean, that to me, I was like, holy shit, like sign me up, because of course you're like, it's interesting. We talked about the physicality because obviously we're talking about, you know, the emotionality of it too, and energetically, but it makes sense. It's like any being is going to evolve over generations. So the fact that you got to like kind of fast forward through that is really interesting and really cool.
Thank you. I mean, I want to go back. I want to go back to Egypt so bad. I think I'm going next year, but you know, I've been on a lot of podcasts and people are like, what if someone can't go to Egypt? Like that's a privilege, you know, how can you start this work right now without having to spend any money or whatever. And what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I didn't take that from the book because I took that your purpose in life was to go to Egypt and bring these messages back. So everyone else did not have to go to Egypt. That's what I gathered from it. Like, no, you were meant to go to, and I don't know how much you love the word teacher, and it doesn't have to be teacher, guide, whatever, so that you can then evoke the same healing in others that they can do from your book, from their own selves, from what they choose to do.
Yes. Thank you for saying that. Two things I want to say.
Right, I was going to say, to jump in on that too, like you had that experience in Egypt, and it doesn't mean other people can't have a quantum experience like that, but it doesn't mean everyone can then line up at that same wall that you did it, and they're not going to have the same experience because it was about your alchemy, your history, your lineage, bringing you to that moment so that you could have that. Now, if more people will awaken, they will probably find their own wall, whatever that is. And it could be a mile away from where they live. Like, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Thank you for saying, I completely agree with that. Like someone listening might go to Egypt, be like, I didn't experience anything. I just liked to see the pyramids. I didn't feel shit, but I went to Portugal, or I went to my son's basketball game and I was in the parking lot and had an epiphany, you know, like there it's available anywhere. And thank you for saying that. I do stand in the role of a teacher. I'm also very clear. I'm a constant student, and I was given information. I'm also a writer. I love to write. I was working on a book deal. I'm like, I'm gonna share this. This is what my book is really for. And, you know, to really write a book, which has 13 different meditations and somatic practices and 88 journal prompts and right there in your hands for $30, like you can taste some of this for yourself. And
$30, you don't have to bribe the guard.
No, you don't have to bribe anybody. Just go to Amazon or thelightworkbook.com. But you know, it's that, yeah, thank you. I really received that. Thank you for that. Cause it's just, it's been interesting. I'm not going to lie. This podcast tour that I'm on, not everybody's reading the book, which is fine. And many are. And my book is, it's a truth-telling book. And people are going to have thoughts around it. And that's new for me. Because I'm, like I said at the beginning, I've like been this like sort of squeaky, clean, bright yellow corporate personal branding agency life. And now I'm talking about the Matrix and Big Pharma and aliens. And my specific philosophies on what this whole thing is about and the reclamation of the feminine, most of all.
Well, I was going to say, I do think what the book does at the very least, even if it's just a pinprick, and it can be way more than that, depending on how someone receives it, it evokes, again, I think it's a reminder subconsciously that you're probably not wholly in yourself. So like yeah. Even me who does a lot of work and is pretty aware, even I had those moments reading it being like, oh fuck. You know what I mean? It was just like a mirror being held up of like, right. Oh God, there's so much work for me to still do. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And I'm very aware. So I can only imagine mm-hmm. for someone who might be even deeper in the trenches of this mm-hmm. disconnect. So yeah, you might get people where that initial reaction is defensiveness almost like,
Yes.
You know, like I know better because the idea of letting go of that idea of knowing better is a whole change in front of you and you have to be willing yeah. and ready.
And going back to what my healer said, you know, when I called her up 6 months into 23, I was like, what did you do to me? She's like, you accepted the assignment. And
I just got chills.
Yeah.
Because I think most of us don't accept our assignment or even realize what the assignment is.
Correct. Both.
Because again, I'm going to go back to what we started with, which I think is interesting, is your agency was one, and yes, it was brands, but you had the intention of, again, authenticity.
Yeah.
So you were like on that path where one could say like, look, I am holding this newness of this evolution of the world and energetically getting people to be their best. Like mm-hmm. you were doing a version of it on a different scale.
I was.
You were. And I could see how it would be really interesting when someone confronts you with what's your purpose to not feel like, and you actually mentioned this a little bit in the book too, but to not be like, well, what do you mean? This is a huge purpose. Like I'm in my purpose. I'm living it. And so then that gets confusing. Well, what did I really sign up for? Yeah. And I like how a lot of it for you, what you came down to also, yes, it's spreading this message specifically, but it was also joy.
Yeah, that's the headline. That's the headline. And I think that can be a very triggering word or concept for people. And I don't really necessarily know why. I do and I don't. I don't even have the words to necessarily articulate it, but it's like I was watching there's this new movie out with Anne Hathaway called like The Idea of You. Have you heard of this?
Yes, I haven't watched it though.
Yeah. I caught like the end of it. Basically the plot is she's like in her 40s and she goes to a concert and falls in love with like a 25-year-old like pop star, and he's, you know, Justin Bieber like famous, and she's like a single mom. And anyway, at the end of the movie, they like just decide to be together publicly, and the media just tears her to pieces. And she's in the office with her colleague and she goes, I don't understand it. I'm just happy. Why are they doing this? And her colleague, just without skipping a beat, was such a good scene. She goes, oh, the world hates happy women. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. Like, that's so layered, actually. And like, men hate happy women. Women hate happy women. Like, and
Women really hate happy women.
Yeah. Yeah.
Almost more than men hate happy women.
Exactly. Exactly. And it sounds so lofty, and yet it's so simple. And at the same time, it's so profound. What the Pleiadians told me in that temple when a lightning struck my body was like, Jessica, you have missed the point. It is supposed to be fun. Mm. Like, what a concept. Like, life should be, you should enjoy it. Like, you get to wear this cute lipstick and drink these yummy electrolytes and wear this cute dress.
I've got electrolytes too.
Right. Have this beautiful conversation with your friend Tal. Like, drop in deep and have someone, you know, read your book and tell you it was good. Like, every moment is such a gift. And we walk around so, and I'm not saying we as me separately, like myself too, like it's a practice, forgetting that. Just
do you hear things differently now? Like when people talk to you, do you receive things differently?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. It's a practice too. I have I write about this in my book too, this practice that I learned, actually can't take credit for it, from like a retreat host years ago who said, when someone says something nice to you, when someone gives you a compliment or reflects something beautiful to you about you, stop, take a breath, put your hand on your heart, look that person in the eye and simply say, thank you, I receive that. And even if you don't really truly, if you make that a practice, you'll start to build the muscle to receive it. And that'll change your life. I really believe in that. Because if we can't receive a kind word, how are you going to expect to receive the love of our life or the dream gig or, you know, the opportunity that we've been longing for? Like, it's so simple, and it requires, I think, slowing down enough, you know, which is back to the conversation we're having around like the pace of life. Mm-hmm. And that we just need to all slow the fuck down a little bit.
It's also so interesting that you turn on the end of that movie, because that's what you're doing now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's your whole work, right? Changing the perception of the feminine and people living in it, embodying it.
Yeah. 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 Truly. It's really, truly, if I were to, and thank you for reflecting that, like pinpoint the core of what I'm up to and I'm here for. It's the reclamation of the feminine and really coming together as a side of the species and really being on the same team and winning and rising and healing together.
Now, you talk, like, a chapter is sisterhood, and we're talking about it now too. Do you feel like your friendships have changed? And I don't mean physically, but how you operate within them.
Yeah.
And when you look back, do you feel like you were always someone who was kind of supportive of other women, or that's something that has evolved?
I've never been competitive. I didn't play sports. I was an actress. Like, I don't have a competitive bone in my body, really. And even when I was competing, quote unquote, and auditioning for like the same roles as my college girlfriends in my department, I say this in the book, like, I was never jealous. I was always sad for myself, but never jealous of them.
That's huge.
I got to give my mom a lot of credit. She raised me well. And, it's also just the way I'm designed. I've had, unfortunately, you know, as we all have, like, women who have been jealous of me or gossipy or low vibrational, you know, unhappy, toxic, and every version of yourself through your 20s, 30s, 40s, like, we're always evolving, and people, you've heard that expression, reason, season, or a lifetime, vibe up or vibe out is what I like to say sometimes. And I'm looking around at my friend circle right now, and I'm really proud of my friend circle. Like, they're women who are really, who have done their work, you know, who, it's sort of a prerequisite, whether I would say it or not. Like, I can't meet you unless you've met yourself. And if we're going to do this thing called be friends, like, we have to commit to the journey of working on ourselves so that we can show up for each other in the way we both deserve. And I've got some really beautiful friends. I don't have a ton. I don't need a ton. None of us do, I don't think. I have really deep and narrow, you know, rich friend circle. And I've worked for that. It's been a long road to kind of, I think, get there. But it's one of my, I say in the book, like, female friendship, the subline to that chapter is the greatest medicine of all.
I totally agree with that.
Right? Like, there's nothing like deep, nourishing, safe, conscious, responsible, loving, supportive, fun female friendships. There's like nothing better in life. Nothing.
Yeah. I always said like that was one thing I did really well. Like, yeah. I was like, no matter what, I like cultivated really good girlfriends.
Yeah. Yeah.
At all stages. And I always was like, how lucky am I? I felt so lucky for that. Lucky.
Yeah.
Because it really does make everything better, or when things are shit, like you just know without a blink, you know exactly where to turn.
Yeah. I have the chills.
It's true really, though.
It's
and they
so
become
true.
Your family, and it's like, it's like a deeper, it's a deeper thing.
It's deeper than I feel. And I like love my husband, and you know, we've all been through our series of romantic relationships, good or bad. There's nothing like the emotional intimacy that you can have with a friend. Like nothing.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Doesn't compare.
And do you feel like your friendships have gotten deeper since your experience in Egypt?
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I've been through, I think they've become, they've become deeper for sure. And also I'm attracting, cause I'm here for new friends. I love making new connections, and it's been beautiful. Like the women that have been coming into my world are of a very, very similar vibration. Just cool.
That is really cool. I mean, look, I've actually taken up a ton of your time. I love this conversation. You're a joy.
You're a joy. Thank you. I was so, when Tanya was like, oh, Tal wants you on. Was I on for my first book with you? I don't know if I was, but I know you, and I know your brand, and I know your Instagram. I know your podcast. I know your community is legit. And I was very honored that you wanted me on. So I mean it. So I was really looking forward to this, and thank you so much.
I'm honored you came on. I'm glad we had this conversation, and I'm really excited for this book to get out there for everyone. And I think the light work is going to be huge. And again, it's everything we talked about here. You guys do not have to go to Egypt. She's giving you all the tricks and ways to open up your own channel and connection to get closer to yourself and own your own feminine. What do you say? One last question. What do you say for men reading this book?
I would love for men to read this book. I think men are an intrinsic part to the planet and need to be at the table. And we need to be having all sorts of conversations about all of it across the whole spectrum of humanity. And I think that you will learn a little bit more about, I think, the feminine experience of what it's like to be on a woman on the planet this time, and how hard it is, and to rise up so that we have more beautiful polarity, and that we let women be more innate to who they are. And I also think if you're on the path spiritually, man or female, like there's a lot of really great insights in there around how to do the work, do the light work. It's for everybody.
It is for everybody. I love that. Thank you. You're amazing. You know what? I want to have you on when you're through the tour.
Yeah, we'll see.
And see how you're doing and how you're holding up.
Yeah, I'd love that. I'm so happy we connected.
And yeah, me too.
Really, you're special. I've done a lot of these, and this was really up there.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I feel the same about you, so I appreciate that. I receive.
Yay. There you go.
I'm learning.
Beautiful to give. Yeah. Good. Thank you.
I'm learning.